Gopijana Balaba Girivardhari. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Yamuna Tiravana Chari. Jaya Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa Puri Vrajakacharja, Ashtotra Shata Shri Srimad, His Divine Grace, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Gaura Prem Anandi. Krishna Prestai, Tate Srimadi Bhakti Ran Swami Dhani. Nepacharne, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, Paschatadeshatarne. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 10, Text 9. The great Brahmin Jada Bharat said, "My dear king and hero, whatever you have spoken sarcastically is certainly true. Although these are not simply words of chastisement, for the body is the carrier. The load carried by the body does not belong to me, for I am the spirit soul. There is no contradiction in your statements, because I am different from the body. I am not the carrier of the palanquin, the body is the carrier. Certainly, as you have hinted, I have not labored carrying the palanquin, for I am detached from the body. You have said that I am not stout and strong, and these words are befitting a person who does not know the distinction between the body and the soul. The body may be fat or thin, but no learned man would say such things of the spirit soul. As far as the spirit soul is concerned, I am neither fat nor skinny. Therefore, you are correct when you say that I am not very stout. Also, if the object of this journey and the path leading there were mine, there would be many troubles for me. But because they relate not to me, but to my body, there is no trouble at all." Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that one who is advanced in spiritual knowledge is not disturbed by the pains and pleasures of the material body. The material body is completely separate from the spirit soul, and the pains and pleasures of the body are superfluous. The practice of austerity and penance is meant for understanding the distinction between the body and the soul, and how the soul can be unaffected by the pleasures and pains of the body. Jadavarat was actually situated on the platform of self-realization. He was completely aloof from the bodily conception. Therefore, he immediately took this position and convinced the king that whatever contradictory things the king had said about his body did not actually apply to him as a spirit soul. Om Agyanati Virandasya Gyananjalashalakaya Chakshurunvilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudhe Namaha. So here the great Brahman Jada Bharat begins his spiritual discourse on the non-physical nature of the spirit soul, a person situated in the mode of passion or ignorance by default is forced to identify with their physical body. If you go out on the streets today and talk to people, if you say, "Sir, you're not this body," they'll look at you as if you're from another planet. Which planet did you come from? Tell someone they're not this body. Because the false ego forces the person in lower states of consciousness to identify with the body. He is forced, he has no choice. If you're in a war and you're captured by the enemy and you're going to be tortured to death by the enemy soldiers, you would, if you could, you would disidentify from that body, but you cannot. Because the penalty for wanting to enjoy the body is that you have to accept the pain that comes to the body. You can't take just one half of it and not the other half. So you are forced, if you're in the modes of passion, ignorance, you have to identify with your physical body. And after leading a life of passion, ignorance for many lifetimes, we go through many, many lifetimes in suffering, then a pious person calls out to God, "Oh God, I'm suffering so much. My mother got cancer and died horribly. My father had a heart attack. My uncle had a stroke and died horribly. Everyone is dying horribly." Finally, you wake up. It takes a few million lifetimes to wake up. But at a certain point, the person in the mode of passion, ignorance, which is everyone in the material world, practically speaking, especially in the age of Kali, persons in the mode of passion and ignorance are beaten repeatedly by the material energy. And after suffering for a long time and seeing the sufferings of others, they cry out to God, "Oh God, I'm suffering so much. Please help me." And then comes along the smiling, bright-faced book distributor of the Bhagavad Gita and says, "Here's, excuse me, sir, I have a book on meditation and yoga for you." And the person is thinking, "Now I've suffered so much, I'm open to anything." So he buys a Bhagavad Gita from the smiling book distributor who is rendering the greatest service to the humanity at large by providing knowledge for people when they finally get fried with the material energy. Because the material energy is designed, certified and designed to fry you. That's its design. There's nothing random. There are no loose cannons on Krishna's ship. The material energy works firmly under Krishna's control. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. Hetunana kuntaya jagat viparivartate. Krishna says in the 9th chapter, text 10 of Bhagavad Gita. Jagat viparivartate, rolling along, viparivartate. The whole material world is rolling on. Not by accident. Everything is completely and entirely under Krishna's control at every second. So the chastisements, the severe chastisements from the material energy are designed by God to bring us to the stage of surrender. So the person in the mode of passion and ignorance, after suffering repeatedly for a long time, calls out, "Oh God, I'm suffering." Gets the Bhagavad Gita and reads in the Bhagavad Gita why I'm suffering. I'm suffering because I'm being punished by Captain Karma. I have performed many activities that have violated my Dharma, and therefore I'm being punished by Captain Karma. So then how not to be punished by Captain Karma? That's elaborately described in Bhagavad Gita. One has to engage in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the 3rd chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that any action not performed as yajna for the pleasure of Vishnu produces karma. Any action. You may think you're a relatively good person. You're just sitting somewhere in a university. You're a mathematician and you're doing mathematical theorems. A relatively innocuous activity. But any action not performed for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu produces karma. Every single thing we do has a reaction in this material world. The stringent laws of material energy are relentless. So one has to know, as a human being, it is one's duty. Srila Prabhupada said, ignorance is no excuse. It is one's duty to find out what the laws of material nature are. And these are described in the Bhagavad Gita in great detail. So then one knows how to lead a lifetime where one is not being punished severely by Captain Karma. Then when one understands these things, one comes to the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness is the balanced mode in which one sees everything in the right perspective. And when you see things in the right perspective, and you lead your life in a way that is relatively free from sinful reactions, then you can peacefully consider the higher goal of life, which is to develop love for God. To develop pure love for God is the highest pleasure. Because the reason why a conditioned soul in passion ignorance pursues sense gratification is that the nature of the soul is to enjoy. Anandamayo Byasat, it says in Vedanta Sutra, the nature of the Supreme is to enjoy, and the nature of his parts and parcels is to want to enjoy. But if you don't know anything about devotional service, your pleasure-seeking propensity has only one outlet. That's through matter. We are driven by our pleasure-seeking propensity as jiva-atmas. That we cannot divorce from ourselves. That's our nature, is to want to enjoy. But if you're not getting your enjoyment from Krishna, your pleasure-seeking propensity forces you. You have no other option than to try to derive pleasure through the material energy. So having now understood all these things in right perspective, we again recall Krishna's super excellent statements from Bhagavad Gita 2:59, param drishtva nivartate. One has to get the higher taste. So how does one get the higher taste? By serious execution of sadhana bhakti. So one might say, well, this sounds very fanatical. The only way to get the higher taste is by serious execution of sadhana bhakti. But you can look at it this way. If you go to a racetrack, all the race cars look very similar. When I was young, I thought, this is very boring. The Fords, the Chevys, they all look the same in the race car stage. In the lower stages, passenger car stage, there's more variety because the stringent requirements of moving through the atmosphere are not so severe at low speed. Actually, drag force is proportional to the cube of the speed. So the drag force goes up very, very rapidly. So when you're dealing with jet aircraft, they all look the same. How boring. I feel like having a square airplane, a rectangular, a block. I don't like this. It's very boring. It's very fanatical. Only this design is to be used. It's very fanatical. But because the functional constraints of the operation are very severe, that's the key point that I'm trying to make. The functional constraints of moving through the atmosphere rapidly without incurring a tremendous inefficient drag force are very severe, and they're relentless. The laws of nature are relentless and very severe. So it is a fact that the only way to achieve a higher pleasure is actually to engage in sadhana bhakti. And to engage in sadhana bhakti, one has to take prescription from the master physician, the supreme spiritual technologists of bhakti yoga. These are the Vaishnav acharyas who have already worked out the technology. Because human beings have been the same for the last 300 trillion years, and human nature will probably not change tomorrow, the spiritual technology has already been worked out. State-of-the-art spiritual technology. That's Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Nectar of instruction, nectar of devotion. These describe in great detail how to execute sadhana bhakti. The essence of sadhana bhakti is performing every action for the pleasure of Krishna, every second. You can try this meditation. At this moment, what can I do that will please Krishna more than anything else at this moment? And that amounts to following the prescription given by the pure Vaishnavas, because Krishna rarely comes off the altar and whispers in your ear, this is what you should do right now. Another way Krishna could do it is through Paramatma, his expansion in your heart, but we're not actually qualified. This is the key point. Qualification comes into play. We are not qualified to hear the deity speak directly, and we're not qualified to hear Paramatma in the heart. So the spiritual master is the external manifestation of the supersoul. That's described in the Shastras. That which Krishna wants to tell you, but you cannot hear because your mind is full of other things going on, then Krishna sends the spiritual master. So the words of the spiritual master are those which Krishna wants to tell you, but you're not qualified to hear directly from Krishna himself. So therefore, the instructions of the spiritual master are the most valuable thing in our life. In one purport, in fact, Prabhupada said the instructions of the spiritual master are more valuable than Krishna's instructions. Because there's no contradiction, they're exactly the same, but the spiritual master can tailor-make the situation. Tailor make the instructions for your particular situation. For example, Mangalartik at 4:30 a.m. maybe a few million years ago that was not the system. But nowadays, that's a very valuable thing for us denizens of Kali Yuga, residing in North America at this time. That's the optimum activity at 4:30 a.m. is to come to Mangalartik. And Tulsi Puja, all these things are designed for our psychophysiological situation. These are actually the optimum, the most powerful thing you can do at this time is the thing that Prabhupada has prescribed at that time. Again, it sounds very fanatical, it's always the same thing. But because the job is difficult, therefore the functional constraints narrow down the options, as all race cars have very similar shapes because of extreme functional constraints on the job to be done. Because the job of disconnecting yourself from identifying with the physical body is not an easy job. In fact, it's a tremendously difficult job to successfully realize that we're not this body, which is the whole point of the verse and purport today. That's what Prabhupada is. That's the verse and purport today. Jadabhard is instructing Maharaj Rukhna, you're not this body. And it's very difficult to understand that. Or maybe say, okay, I know I'm not this body, but 2 seconds later, I'm engaging in activities based on the body. We can walk around all day long, I'm not this body, I'm not this body, I'm not, but the prasadam sure smells good, I'm not this body, I'm not this body, but there's halava and sabji, I'm not this body. Sabji and pakoras, I am this body. Where's the prasad? So, we must of course understand that we're not this body. That's sambandha gyan, it's theoretical. But gyan has to turn into vigyan at a certain stage of your advancement. If gyan doesn't fructify into vigyan, then we're stranded on the boat of theoretical knowledge. We're shipwrecked at sea on the boat of theoretical knowledge, which is not going to get us to the other side of the ocean of nescience in which we are now situated. Therefore, for the gyan to turn into vigyan, we have to become attached to the activities of sadhana bhakti. Prabhupada wrote in one purport, anarthas are destroyed when one becomes attached to the activities of Krishna consciousness. That's how anarthas are destroyed. They are not destroyed if we're not attached. You may temporarily overcoat them with some theoretical knowledge or repress them. Repression or overcoat them by various theoretical conceptions, but they spring into action. Whenever suitable sense objects are presented to the conditioned soul whose heart is not cleansed, then the desire to enjoy becomes overwhelmingly strong. We will find actually at the beginning of the sixth canto, Shukadeva Goswami tests Maharaj Parikit's intelligence. When Maharaj Parikit asks Shukadeva Goswami, how can conditioned souls be relieved of the horrendous sufferings involved in going to hell? Because right before the beginning of the sixth canto is the end of the fifth canto, which describes in detail, in nauseating detail, the different kinds of hells. There's at least 23 different kinds of hells, which are described in nauseating detail. There's one called Kumbhi Paka. That literally means cooking pot. Paka means to cook, and Kumbhi means pot. Kumbhi Paka. So you're thrown into the boiling oil by the Yamduts, and they ain't very friendly, I'll tell you. I'm sorry to say. And they're not very interested in your excuses either. But I lived a good life. I was a good man. I took care of my wife and kids. Into the pot, dude. They're relentless. In the fifth, it's described those persons who mercilessly throw lobsters into boiling water. I protested when my parents did that when I was a kid. I thought this is horrendous. I was wondering if I had been brought up in a den of rakshasas. They would take the lobster. It's alive. At least you could mercifully dispose of it, as Narada Muni told to Mrigari the hunter. Why not do it mercifully? But it's fully alive, and then it's thrown into boiling hot water. Actually, I refused to eat. I just walked away crying. My parents thought I was crazy. This is demonic. This is rakshashik behavior. So they don't see the connection. And later on, they have to go to the court of Yamaraj. Maharaj Parikit is a Vaishnava. Vaishnava means para dukha dukhi. The sufferings of others are his own sufferings. That's a very elevated state of consciousness. That's a Vaishnava, a genuine Vaishnava. So at the end of the fifth canto, in nauseating detail, the different hells are described. There's another one called Krimi Bhoja. Krimi means worm and Bhoja means eating. As you are madly munching on someone else is madly munching on you. On this planet, you take birth as a worm, and your only food is other worms. So you begin hunting, and you find some other worm to chew on. And while you're chewing on somebody else is chewing on you. That's this hell. It's called Krimi Bhoja. So this is horrendous. This is ghastly. Of course, modern people will say this is all fantasy until they wind up there. At which time they will have many millennia to explain to the Amduts how it's all fantasy. So Maharaj Prickett, he doesn't reject the Shastra. He doesn't recommend the option of relegating the Shastra to the realm of fantasy, which is the option taken by modern Vikarmis. The Vikarmi relegates the Shastra to the realm of fantasy and continues on with his mad dash for sense gratification. But the Vaishnava accepts the Shastra and then inquires, how can people be saved from having to go to these hells? That was Maharaj Prickett's question. As a soft-hearted and glorious Uttama Adhikari, Mahabhagavat, he asked, my dear master, Shukadeva Goswami, how can people be freed from having to go to these hells? That's the beginning of the sixth canto. So Shukadeva Goswami, he did not initially give the best prescription. He tested the intelligence. This is very interesting. He tested Maharaj Prickett's intelligence at the beginning of the sixth canto by saying, if before the end of this body one performs ritualistic atonement, karma kandya, good karmic activities to counteract the bad karma. If one performs good karma, enough good karma before one quits his present material body, he is then not forced to go to the hellish regions. That's what Shukadeva Goswami said. And Maharaj Prickett say, but I see that people who perform good karmic activities, they have not gotten free from the desire to perform sinful activities again, the desire to perform sense gratification. This may be another unpalatable message of the Bhagavatam, but sense gratification is sinful. It may come in various degrees, but any kind of sense gratification is considered sinful because Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. It may sound like a stark and heavy message, but we should understand what the Shastra is saying. Sense gratification is sinful. Of course, one can do it in such a way as to not incur sinful reactions, but the tendency for sense gratification is itself the root of sinful activity. And Srila Prabhupada translates the word abhadrani in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.17. In the word for word, Prabhupada translates abhadrani as... Abhadrani literally means inauspiciousness, inauspicious activities. Prabhupada translates abhadrani there as the desire to enjoy matter. We should make the connection. The desire to enjoy matter is the essence of inauspiciousness. But this can only be uprooted by param dristva nivartite, getting the higher tastes of love of God. So Maharaj Prickett was very intelligent. He rejected karma kandya, atonement, because he said people still, even after they atone, and we know in Europe, in the Catholic days, the classical Catholic Church, and also in the Vedic system, the karmis or vikarmis, who are a little bit alert to the crushing power of the material energy, they, after indulging in sense gratification, they feel at least I better save myself from suffering. Even though I like the program of sense gratification, I am aware that I will have to suffer. So they run to the priest and they do atonement. They beg for some atonement. In Europe, the Catholic priest would then give some atonement, prescription for atonement. But then they will go out again because they're driven. They're forced by the modes of passion ignorance to again engage in sinful activities. And then they come back again. Next Sunday, you go to church. One day a week, that's all I can tolerate, going to the church. Because it's so damn boring. I can tolerate going one day a week because I'm afraid of being punished. And I do my atonement, not only in Europe, the Catholic system, but also in the Vedic system for less intelligent people. Alpamedasa, those persons who are endowed with less brain substance, alpamedasa, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So if you're endowed with less brain substance, after dashing madly for sense gratification, you run to the priest or the Brahmin and you ask for a prescription for getting free from those sins, and then you do some karma kandiyas, yagyas if you can, or pay some priest to do the yagyas for you, whatever it takes. And then you're freed from those sinful reactions, but your heart is still full of the desire to enjoy the material energy. So after doing this for a long time, one may go many births of having to do this kind of thing. Actual progress is very slow. The program of self-realization is a multi-lifetime proposition in the classic Varnashram system, because the conditioned soul is so bewildered by Maya and so intent on gratifying his senses that it takes him a long time to understand these things. He has to go through the school of hard knocks, we say in America, getting knocked around, the hard knocks. So after many lifetimes of atonement, then you begin to wake up, this is such a waste of time. I have to undergo so much endeavor to get free from the sinful reactions, and I'm driven again and again. Then Maharaj Parikit, this is very interesting, then Shukadev Goswami said, Jnanakanda. He didn't immediately give bhakti. This is very interesting. And also, in Majjalila chapter 8, when Ramananda Roy is speaking with Lord Chaitanya, again, this is quite fascinating. Lord Chaitanya was asking questions, and Ramananda Roy did not immediately give the highest conclusion. He led the reader through a series of fallback positions. And this is valuable because it puts the whole Vedic philosophy in the right perspective. One has to have the proper perspective on reality. So Shukadeva Goswami said that Jnanakanda, one should perform tapasya, tapo divyam. One should do austerities. One should renounce sense gratification. The jnani has finally waken up to the realization that sense gratification is the cause of suffering. And therefore the jnani, he does not engage in, he tries very hard. It is a great struggle, as we know from the histories, like Vishwamitra Muni was meditating with severe tapasya in the Himalayas, and Indra became afraid of his growing Brahma Tejas. The yogi acquires more power. The more you can restrain yourself from sense gratification, the more power you accumulate, Brahma Tejas. So Indra became afraid and sent Menaka, and all it took was the tinkling ankle bells of Menaka, and his austerities went out the window. Just the tinkling ankle bells. So this Jnanakanda is also not a very secure position, because you don't get the Param Dristva until you have to do so many austerities to finally reach the stage of just tasting maybe a little bit of the Brahman realization. But even that, although in 1427 Krishna does say that the Brahman is the ultimate position of happiness, still, it is nothing compared to the position of devotional service. The position of devotional service situates you within an ocean of spiritual happiness, so you're not attracted to the material energy. And this is victory, finally victory, for the conditioned soul after so many lifetimes. Real victory is when you're situated in the ocean of transcendental happiness. As it's described in Majjhila chapter 13, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was situated in the ocean of transcendental happiness when dancing in front of Lord Jagannath. And actually Lord Chaitanya, his ecstasies are very intimate. The ecstasies that he exhibited were very intimate. Therefore the Vaishnavs formed three circles surrounding the Lord. This is very interesting, to keep the crowds from coming too close, because Lord Chaitanya was exhibiting transcendental ecstatic symptoms of divine love. So it's described that three circles were formed surrounding Lord Chaitanya at the Rath Yatra, when Lord Chaitanya was dancing before Lord Jagannath. Just to check the crowds from coming too near the Lord, they formed three circles. The first circle was guided by Nityananda Prabhu, who is Balaram himself, the possessor of great strength. So the innermost circle contained the innermost confidential devotees, headed by Lord Balaram, Nityananda himself. The second circle was formed by Kashishvara and Govinda. These were actually two godbrothers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kashishvara and Govinda. And they were very dear associates of the Lord, but Ishvarapuri ordered them to render menial service. It's actually an offense to engage your godbrothers in serving you, taking care of your bodily necessities like cooking for you or washing your clothes. That's considered an offense because we address our godbrothers as Prabhu. We offer all respects to our godbrothers. So we should not engage them in menial service, our own physical bodily necessities. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very afraid when Govinda and Kashishvara came to Jagannath Puri under the order of Ishvarapuri. As Ishvarapuri was departing from this world, he ordered two of his disciples, two very advanced, glorious, pure devotees, Govinda and Kashishvara. He ordered them to go to Jagannath Puri and render personal service to their godbrother, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they went, they were very happy about it, but Lord Chaitanya was not very happy. So he turned to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who happened to be present, and said, Sarvabhauma, just see, the scriptures say I cannot engage my godbrothers in my personal service, but my guru has ordered it. What shall I do? It's a very difficult situation. The scriptures say we shouldn't let our godbrothers serve us, but the guru has ordered it. Now what to do? So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave his mature verdict. The mature verdict, he said, is the order of the spiritual master is so important that it can transcend or supersede Shastric injunctions. Shastric can be modified by pure Vaishnavas, by Nityasiddha, very exalted and very advanced Shaktivesh avatars such as Srila Prabhupada, may modify the Shastra appropriately according to time, place, and circumstance. It's not actually a violation of the Shastra, it's a relevant adjustment of the Shastra. For example, there were no brahmacharinis in the classical Vedic paradigm. It didn't exist. So Prabhupada created the brahmacharini ashram, which is logical, because if a single woman wants to take shelter of Krishna, she has to have a facility to do so. Prabhupada was so merciful, he built a house in which everyone could live. So Prabhupada wanted everyone to get the chance to have the mercy. So brahmacharinis, that's an ISKCON novelty. It doesn't exist in India. So some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, they criticized Prabhupada. And that was an offense on their part, because Prabhupada is so exalted, he can make these kinds of adjustments. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he gave the mature conclusion, the mature verdict, that you should accept Kashishvara and Govinda as your personal servants. So Lord Chaitanya had to accept them as his personal servants. And Govinda was very exalted. He would take care of arranging Lord Chaitanya's lunch and persons to come and see Lord Chaitanya. And Kashishvara was very powerful physically. He was huge and strong. So he would protect Lord Chaitanya when the crowds would surge in too close and would, like a stampede. Because everyone wanted to meet Lord Chaitanya. But it can be dangerous if so many people are coming and crowding so close. Kashishvara would lovingly move the crowd or keep the crowd from coming too close to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was Kashishvara, was his service. And a third circle consisted of Maharaj Prataparudra and his associates. Maharaj Prataparudra was also a pure Vaishnava, but he was situated as a king. He had to be a king, so he had to do that yajna, be a king. And therefore Lord Chaitanya refused to see him, because he wanted to instruct his associates that sannyasis and renunciates and serious Vaishnavas cannot deal with worldly people. One will be contaminated dealing with worldly persons. At one point, when Lord Chaitanya was dancing in ecstasy, he fainted in ecstatic love and fell on the ground. And by divine arrangement, Nityananda and the others were not present. They were not close to Lord Chaitanya. So only Maharaj Prataparudra was there. So Maharaj Prataparudra lovingly lifted up Lord Chaitanya, who had fainted on the ground in ecstatic love. So Maharaj Prataparudra lifted up Lord Chaitanya, and then Lord Chaitanya came to external consciousness and said, oh, how unfortunate it is that I am being touched by a person in mundane consciousness. alas, this is a great misfortune. So the king was actually afraid if he had done something wrong, because he was a pure devotee and he did everything right. He just wanted to serve. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya informed King Prataparudra that actually he did not do anything wrong. It's simply that Lord Chaitanya has to point out an example. Lord Chaitanya had to make many examples in his preaching. For example, he was also very, very strict and heavy on Chota Haridas. Chota Haridas begged some rice from Madhavi Devi, a very exalted, pure devotee of the Lord, Madhavi Devi. But she had a Mataji body. She was in the female body, so it was considered a great offense for someone in the renounce order even to beg some rice from Madhavi Devi. So Lord Chaitanya refused to see Chota Haridas. He simply refused to see him. Lord Chaitanya said, "My mind is not under my control. I cannot tolerate to see the face of a person in the renounced order of life who deals intimately with women." And Lord Chaitanya was relentless. He would not change his view on this matter. The days went by. First, Chota Haridas fasted for a week. He was a pure devotee. Chota Haridas was another one of the exalted pure devotee associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he was being pointed out by the Lord. So Chota Haridas fasted for a whole week. He thought, if the Lord will not see me, my life is entirely useless. I should give up my life. So he fasted for a week, and then all the devotees their hearts were broken because they were seeing this poor Vaishnav. He's suffering so much not being allowed to see Lord Chaitanya. This Chota Haridas underwent extreme suffering. So all the Vaishnavs, Nithanand and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and all the great pure devotees went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to beg on behalf of Chota Haridas. They went to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, "My mind is not under my control. I cannot tolerate seeing the face of a person in the renounce order who deals intimately with women. If you ask me one more time, I will leave this place and you'll never see me again." So all the devotees were in terrible anxiety. What to do now? This poor devotee is suffering so much. This is how compassionate the Vaishnavas are. Or Kripa Sindhu, Vanchakalpa Trubhasa Kripa Sindhu. Sindhu means ocean. They're an ocean of kripa or mercy. They cannot be happy when another devotee is not getting the mercy. We should not be selfish and just interested in our own advancement. We should be compassionate and care about all the other devotees that we're living with. If someone is having difficulties, how miserly we are if we don't try to help the other Vaishnavas in the ashram. If someone is struggling, if we have no compassion, it means our heart is caked with the crud of sense gratification. It's overpowered. It's steel-framed. It says in Bhagavatam, second canto, the heart is steel-framed. If we have no compassion for the other devotees in the ashram who have come here like us to try to get the mercy of the Lord and try to become genuine devotees and go back to Godhead. So the devotees approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were in tremendous anxiety. If we're a real Vaishnava, we'll be in anxiety when others are suffering. They were in great anxiety. They couldn't be happy. This Chota Haridas, he's losing his life. He's fasting. He can't live. "Please, O Lord, please be merciful." Lord Chaitanya said, "If you ask one more time, I'm going away and you'll never see me again." So what did the Vaishnavas do? They went to Param Anandapuri. Param Anandapuri was a disciple of Madhavendrapuri and therefore was a godbrother of Ishvarapuri, who is Lord Chaitanya's Diksha Guru. And the Vaishnav etiquette is such that one must respect the godbrothers of one's own guru as much as one respects one's guru. We should not think only my guru is good, everybody else is useless. That's a Kanishtha mentality. We have to guard against the Kanishtha mentality. Only my guru is good, everybody else is useless. The godbrothers of our guru, like if your guru is Romapad Swami, so then his godbrother is Radhanath Swami. So when Radhanath Swami comes, even if your guru happens to be Romapad Swami, we have to offer equal respects to Radhanath Maharaj or the other godbrothers. So Param Anandapuri, he was a godbrother of Ishvarapuri. Very exalted, Param Anandapuri. Lord Chaitanya would offer all respects to him. Of course, the devotees don't want to have God offering respects to them, but still, Advaita Acharya and Paramananda Puri, they were godbrothers of Ishvara Puri, so Lord Chaitanya would respect them tremendously. So the Vaishnavas developed a clever plan. They went to Paramananda Puri to beg on behalf of Chota Haridas. So Paramananda Puri, a great exalted Vaishnava, he was always swimming in ecstatic love because he was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. He had received from Madhavendra Puri the ecstatic Vipralamba Seva that he brought to this world. Viraha or Vipralamba. These mean ecstatic love of God in the mood of Srimati Radharani. It did not actually exist in our Sampradaya until Madhavendra Puri brought it from Goloka Vrindavan. So Paramananda Puri was very exalted, always floating in ecstatic love of God. And the Vaishnava said, "Oh Lord, please appeal, go to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and appeal to his soft-hearted nature on behalf of Chaitanya." So one day Paramananda Puri came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then, as always, Lord Chaitanya offered full dandavat obeisances. As soon as he saw Paramananda Puri, Lord Chaitanya would offer dandavat obeisances. And then Paramananda Puri, with folded hands, he said, because Paramananda Puri knew very well that Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so although technically speaking, by Vaishnava etiquette, Paramananda Puri was in a superior position and could have just treated Lord Chaitanya like a disciple. But Paramananda Puri was very much aware of Lord Chaitanya's exalted status. So he said, "Oh my Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, completely independent. But please, this Chota Haridas, his offense was extremely minor. He just begged some rice from a pure Vaishnavi, Madhavi Devi. Please be merciful." And then Lord Chaitanya began, he told Govinda, "Please pack my bags." And he said, "Oh my Lord, Paramananda Puri, please give me permission to go. I'm leaving now." He was very respectful to Paramananda Puri. He said, "I can't tolerate being here anymore." So Paramananda Puri caught hold of his feet and said, "Don't leave. I won't ask ever again." This is how strict Lord Chaitanya was. It was unbelievably strict. So the devotees, with crestfallen hearts, they went to Chota Haridas, and they said, "Chota Haridas, we tried every conceivable strategy. The Lord will not, for now the Lord is not relenting, but he's an ocean of mercy, he will relent very soon. Just so go take prasad." So Chota Haridas began taking prasad like normal, but he was always in terrible anxiety. He would look at the Lord from a distance with terrible, because he's a pure Vaishnav. He was used as an example. So every day he would go day after day after day. After 1 year, the Lord was still merciless, transcendentally merciless, because he had to make the example. He knew later on that there would be sahajiyas who would degrade the whole Vaishnav Sampradaya by their sahajic activities of having illicit sex in the name of practicing Ras Leela. Such a degraded mentality. So Lord Chaitanya wanted to head it off at the pass. Foreseeing the degraded abuse of Vaishnav theology by the Prakriti Sahajiyas, Lord Chaitanya wanted to stop this practice, to nip it in the bud, so he would not relent. After a whole year of every day, Chota Haridas, with a broken heart, would see Lord Chaitanya from a distance by the Garuda Stamba. Lord Chaitanya would stay back by the Garuda Stamba. Stamba means column. In a classical Indian temple, it would be behind Prabhupada, there would be a stamba or column upon which Garuda is situated. And the temples are usually large, especially the Jagannath. The main temple of Jagannath Puri is very large. And Lord Chaitanya would not come up close to see Lord Jagannath, who was situated on the altar. Lord Chaitanya stayed back by the Garuda Stambha. This is described in the Majjalila chapter 1, actually. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, "What was the strength of Lord Chaitanya's love? There was a deep ditch by the Garuda Stambha, and that ditch was filled with the tears from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eyes." Such was the intensity of the love of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Just seeing Lord Jagannath, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would cry so many tears that he would fill up a deep ditch The dimensions of the ditch are not stated, but we can imagine it was quite deep. Once Mother Sachi said, "My son cannot be a human being. How can a human being cry rivers of tears?" He would cry so much tears that the acharyas compare them to the goddess Ganga appearing on his cheeks. It would just be flowing. That's what Vrindavan Das Thakur says in Chaitanya Bhagavata. It's like goddess Ganga appeared right there. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would stay back by the Garuda Stambha, and he would just cry tears of ecstatic love just seeing Lord Jagannath. This is actual darshan. If you want to know what real darshan of the deities is, this is actual darshan, where you're feeling so much happiness just to see the deities. We take it for granted. Oh, I have to come to Mangalartik again, otherwise I won't get breakfast prasad. But what does it really mean to see the deities? Lord Kapila says in the third canto that when a real Vaishnav sees the deities, he almost faints in ecstasy. It's stated in the third canto. It's not just Chaitanya Charitamrita. Often in the higher strata of spiritual ecstasies, it's Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto. The nitty-gritties of sadhana bhakti. Lord Kapila explains in great detail in the third canto how to execute sadhana bhakti, practical steps. And he says when a real Vaishnav sees the deities, he almost faints, he almost loses consciousness just seeing the deities. We may faint if we hear that the oven blew up and there's no Sunday feast. And we'll have, there'll be nothing to eat. Then we would faint, but not exactly in ecstasy. We'd faint because our heart is captured by sense gratification. See, we have to transfer our allegiance from being pure devotees of Maya to being pure devotees of Krishna. We have to change our allegiance, our camp. We're residing in the wrong camp. The real camp is when you see the deities. That's actual darshan. Your mind becomes absorbed. Every little aspect of the transcendental Archa Murti, Archa Vigraha, is full of spiritual inspiration. It's an entire meditation. If you read the works of Rupa Goswami and the other Vaishnavas, they go on and on describing the different flutes of Krishna, the different ornaments of Krishna. This is real darshan of the deities. Okay, so we're not on the highest level. We have to be training. The temple is meant to train. We should not be satisfied to remain on the Kanishta platform, because if you do, you're going back to Godhead is uncertain. The chance of having to take another material body is a very realistic probability. I cannot give an accurate calculation. I cannot use the molecular biological analysis to do an accurate calculation on the probability of going back to Godhead. But actually, in one letter, it's recorded in the book Servant of the Servant by Tamal Krishna Maharaj. One letter Prabhupada wrote to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, at some point, he was a very great Vaishnava, very sincere devotee of Prabhupada, but he was a little attacked by sex desire, so he was thinking about getting married. He was only 1 year in the movement, that's natural. He was very sincere, he thought, I don't want to be a faker, let me just honestly become a grihasta. So Prabhupada had him in training to become a future pillar of the ISKCON society. Prabhupada had big plans for him, preaching all over the world. So he went to Prabhupada, this is 1969 in Los Angeles, and he said, Prabhupada, maybe I should just get married. And Prabhupada said, do you want to preach Krishna consciousness? Forget about this idea. 75% chance you will not go back to Godhead. It's right there in Servant of the Servant. There's different angles of view on this. I won't get into the whole. It's good. Grihastha ashram is a genuine ashram. Ashram means a secure position from which to make advancement. But in this particular case, Prabhupada was saying, because Tamal Krishna was in the fast lane, heading for sannyas and become a GBC and you know, starting new projects and preaching all over the world. And that, so Prabhupada was very strict in that case and said 75% chance you'll not go back to Godhead if you enter Grihastha ashram. It's right there in the book. So, but the point is we should try to advance systematically. There are many glorious grihasthas actually. Bhrigupati Prabhu is a grihastha. He's a devotee in Los Angeles. He's been distributing Prabhupada's books since 1973. He's now on Warp Tour. His body is 62 years old. I was a failure. I flunked out of the school of Sankirtan. He's doing the Warp Tour happily in the 110 degree weather in Phoenix, Arizona. He's going out every day with a 62-year-old body. He's a grihastha. So the grihastha ashram is actually, if you do it properly, grihastha ashram, not grihamedi, there's a distinction. One has to be a genuine grihastha, meaning that one intends to make spiritual advancement. It can be a little tricky, like going to the Sunday feast and eating only the rice, and not the sweet rice, the pakoras, and the sabji. One has to exercise proper controls and restraints and follow the rules and regulations for the grihastha ashram. But if one performs it properly, then one emerges successfully on the other end as a vanaprast and then sannyas. So that's the bona fide. In fact, that's recommended for most people, and most of the exalted disciples of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were actually grihasthas, interestingly enough. To take the other side, one has to analyze all sides of the picture. Some of the greatest Vaishnavas, Vasudev Dat, who Lord Chaitanya said, Vasudev Dat owns my body, he can sell me in any marketplace. He was one of the greatest, actually, of all Vaishnavas. He was a grihastha. Similarly, Srivast Thakur and Advaita Acharya, actually the greatest, practically speaking, the greatest associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were all grihasthas. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grihastha, and even Srila Prabhupada, the Shaktivesh Avatar Uttama Adhikari Mahabhagavat, who was selected out of all the personalities to spread Krishna consciousness all around the world, was also a grihastha. So we have to see things in the right perspective. So Lord Chaitanya, he would not actually relent. And Chota Haridas, after 1 year of being brokenhearted, he realized that he must get the mercy of the Lord by giving up his physical body. So he went to the Triveni, and he was glorious. He drowned himself in the Triveni. He had so much disinterest in his body. The whole point of today's verse is we're not this body. So this Chota Haridas is a great example of someone who had so little concern for his physical body and so much concern for getting the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What did he do with his physical body? He did what Lord Chaitanya wanted him to do with that physical body. He destroyed it. He drowned himself in the Triveni. This is in Antalila. Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chota Haridas drowned himself. He gave up his physical body. And after doing that, he came in a subtle body and he was singing to Lord Chaitanya in a Gandharva-like subtle body. Because he was a pure devotee. Lord Chaitanya then accepted him. After he did the proper penance and atonement and tapasya for his transgression, which was relatively minor, but Lord Chaitanya had to make the point so as to head off the deviant sahajiyas. The sahajiyas had become so representative of Gaudiya Vaishnavism that by the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, many respectable people in India, they refused to take Gaudiya Vaishnavism seriously because Gaudiya Vaishnavism was synonymous with deviant sahajiyas in Vrindavan dressing up as gopis and having illicit sex in the holy dham of Sri Vrindavan. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his greatest contribution to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to restore Vaishnavism to a respectable status. Vaishnavism had degraded to an unrespectable status by the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the middle 1800s. Around 1850, 1860. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur single-handedly restored Vaishnavism to a respectable status by his powerful preaching. He was a very exalted, another exalted Nityasiddha, pure devotee of the Lord, sent from the transcendental Goloka Vrindavan to preach Krishna consciousness in this world, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And his son was also of the same stature, exalted, topmost Vaishnava, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Therefore, it's so important to read the writings of these great empowered acharyas. These are all pure devotees coming from Goloka Vrindavan. They're not neophytes. They're not sadhakas. They are siddhas. They are totally perfect Vaishnavas in every respect. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaura Kishordas Babaji, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, all of these persons are... I don't even have words to properly describe how exalted they are. They can see the pastimes of the Lord continuously within their hearts. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur underwent a Nam Yajna for 9 years in Shidam, Mayapur. He was chanting like Haridas Thakur, 300,000 holy names, 192 rounds every day. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur took a vow. He figured that he needed purification, just see the humility, to spread Krishna consciousness for the mission. He felt that he needed purification, so he sat down in Shidam, Mayapur day and night. Whether it was raining or not, he had a little hut, a kutir, and the roof was broken. The rainwater was pouring in, so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta would sit under an umbrella and chant as the rains were pouring down. He was chanting 300,000 holy names a day, and every day he would eat only a little bit of white rice and nothing else. One time a day, just a little bit of rice and nothing else for 9 years. We'll be lucky if we could do that for 9 days. That's what it means to be Nitya Siddha. He never had a false ego. This is the power of the program given by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada, the sadhana program that we do every day, and which we may unfortunately take for granted. But this sadhana bhakti program is the program that will give you ecstatic love of God. It is the most valuable thing in our life, is sadhana bhakti. It is what will transform you from the Kanishta, who feels bored when he sees the deity, to the exalted Vaishnava, who feels ecstasy when he sees the form of the Lord or chants the holy name of the Lord. And the associates of Lord Chaitanya, they were so exalted. This Chota Haridas, he was singing in a subtle body. He would come and sing. There's a beautiful picture you may have seen in Chaitanya Charitamrita. He has a subtle body like the Gandharva, and he's singing for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Lord Chaitanya was very pleased. He accepted him back in his subtle body, and he would sing. And all the devotees began speculating, what happened to Chota Haridas after he committed suicide? Maybe he took the body of a ghost. But Svarup Damodar was very exalted. He's another Nitya Siddha from the camp of Srimati Radharani. So Svarup Damodar Goswami, he told the Vaishnavas, Chota Haridas chanted Hare Krishna all his life. He was a great associate of Lord Chaitanya. He could not have become a ghost. He actually is, I hear him, because Svarup Damodar knew he was so advanced. He could. I hear that Chota Haridas is singing for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya is accepted and back. And the devotees went to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they said, Chota Haridas has given up his life. He drowned himself in the Triveni. And Lord Chaitanya smiled and said, yes, this is the proper atonement for one in the renounced order who violates the sannyas ashram. This is the only way that he can receive the mercy of the Lord, is by giving up his physical body. So that was Lord Chaitanya's strictness. These are all wonderful pastimes, and they all have a very deep message. So thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, for him it was appropriate. Lord Chaitanya was pleased when he gave up his physical body. For us, it would not be appropriate. In Hari Sari's Transcendental Diary, there's a passage in 1976, Mayapur Festival. Vishnujan Maharaj asked Srila Prabhupada, what should a sannyasi do if he has broken the rules of the sannyas ashram? There were 10 or 12 sannyasis surrounding Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, what Chota Haridas did is the correct atonement. But then all the sannyasis were actually very shocked because it sounded very heavy. So they began to question Prabhupada further. And Prabhupada said, but Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his associates are Nitya Siddhas. They're Bhajan Anandis. Chota Haridas was not engaged in actively spreading the mission. The preaching mission. I have a preaching mission to perform. I'm a ghost Janandi, and I need my disciples. If one of my disciples as a sannyasi gets into trouble, he should become a grihasta. In the eighth canto, Prabhupada explains with Gajendra, if one is not strong enough to fight Maya in one position, one should fight Maya from the another position. If a sannyasi in ISKCON falls, he should take the humble role, enter the Grihastha ashram, and continue serving the mission of his spiritual master. That's recorded in Hari Sari's Transcendental Diary in 1976, March of 1976, when Prabhupada was, it was the Mayapur Festival 1976, which was really an amazing, 1975-76, Mayapur Festivals were unbelievably, the kirtans were unbelievable, the boys were going wild in ecstasy. ISKCON was flying with success in 1975-76. They took a whole jet, they chartered an entire jet. It left Los Angeles entirely filled with devotees happily chanting kirtan. It reached New York, and actually it was half full. It was a 747, it was a jumbo jet. Half full in Los Angeles with ecstatic ISKCON devotees. It landed in New York and filled up with the rest of the devotees. Then it reached London, and then I guess there was still room for a few devotees to hop on board. By the time it left London, it was entirely full. So it went. In those days, they didn't have nonstop flights all the way to India. So LA to New York, New York to London, London to Delhi, and then you have to take a plane from Delhi to Calcutta. So at each stage, by the time they were landing, they were having Vishnudhan Swami was leading kirtans. It was rocking. This is Radha Damodar Vilas, part two. The kirtans were rocking in ecstasy. All the devotees were so happy. Everyone was wild, spreading Krishna consciousness with wild, with reckless abandon. In 1975, by the end of the year, they had distributed 6 million pieces of literature. About 2 million or a little more of those were Back to Godhead magazine. So 4 million books. The number of Gitas, I can check again, as I recall, 600,000 Bhagavad Gitas were distributed in 1975. The stats are given in Servant of the Servant, the book by Tamal Krishna. There's three copies down in our library, I saw. It's a wonderful book. If you read this book, you'll become so fired up about spreading Krishna consciousness. Whenever you feel uninspired, just go for the positive. Think about spreading Krishna consciousness. Immediately you become inspired. Instead of lamenting about our own anarthas, we should take the positive approach and become engaged, fully engaged in the preaching mission. We can mope around all day about our anarthas. That's not going to help you advance. Take the positive step. Become fully engaged in the sadhana program. And look at the devotees who did it. It's recorded in these books. Servant of the Servant, Radha Damodar Vilas Part 1 and 2, and Lilamrita. And you add up all of those, and the Great Transcendental Adventure. There's thousands of pages these books have. Thousands of pages of inspiring pastimes of ISKCON devotees like you and me, born in Chicago, born in San Diego, born in America with a body made of passion ignorance, who became very advanced very quickly because they served Prabhupada's mission. They became very happy in the service of Prabhupada. We don't have to be unhappy in Prabhupada's service. We can be jubilant. Just take on the mission of the spiritual master. Work for the mission. Fill your heart with spreading of Krishna consciousness. And then gradually become attracted to the leelas. If you do this as the decades roll by, you become more enchanted. You become enchanted by the pastimes of the Lord, and then you become fixed up in Krishna consciousness by working for the mission. If you don't work hard for the preaching mission, you'll never become advanced. It's a simple fact. This is the last thing. I'm about to end the class. In around 1974, Prabhupada went to Hawaii. There were a group of Vaishnavs, Siddha Sarup's group. They had left ISKCON, but they did exactly the same thing. They had temples, they had deities, they had morning program, everything we do, but no spreading of Krishna consciousness. The devotees asked Prabhupada, will they actually advance? Prabhupada said 300 lifetimes will be required because they're not preaching the Sankirtan mission. 300 lifetimes. There's so much mercy in preaching. Why avoid the mercy? If you can easily get that which is so valuable, why take the more difficult route? Srila Prabhupada ki.